Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, it's Monday, July 17th. The heat wave is through the roof, but we have a lot of heat that was actually, was represented or brought forward by none other than our guest, who's on Mondays, and that's none other than John Bailey, who's a White Plains CitizenNet reporter, publisher, and editor. And what he did was he ended up pointing out that it's been 23 years since he and I began this process of the online websites that is White Plains CitizenNet reporter for him, and it's the Yonkers Tribune for me. And whatever happened to Sean Culver, he was the guy that put it all together because he had the technology, the technological expertise to put the websites together, and we were part of the threesome. Is he still working?
I'm sure he is.
Okay, because I haven't looked up Scarsdale today. Yeah, he was under just Scarsdale today, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Scarsdale today.
Okay. To look that up because I haven't spoken to him in years.
No, it's unfortunate, but he suggested we get together and form a network. And heck, we could be right up there with Fox News by now, but we've done that. But we didn't network it. Enough, you know. But anyway, I mean, when you come right down to it, I think you were on a little bit before me, and they were basically the first news websites in the area.
I don't remember at that point, because it didn't seem to matter. I was just thrilled that the three of us were working together, or at least aligned, even though we didn't do the same news reporting because we had the different communities that we were serving. So therefore,
right,
the news reporting had to be different because the communities were different. So that was really quite fascinating. So first of all, I have to congratulate you for 23 years of exceptional work. And what's really fascinating on top of everything else, you need to be congratulated because you were able to recognize that you had 2,575,774 visits in 1 year. That is mind-boggling. Literally unbelievable.
I have the WordPress statistics, and they monitor it every week. And despite some real slow news weeks, we are able to sustain about 500 persons a day.
Listen, I've got to ask you, is there any possibility you could do something about the, the speaker that you're speaking into? Because it's fading in and
How's
out.
How's that?
This is
How's
better.
That?
Much better now. Okay.
Okay.
So
I'll just,
what's fascinating
okay,
is
I'll
what's really
speak close.
What's fascinating about the statistics, which are over 2,575,000, is – and this is probably the most crucial aspect of the statistics that you were able to decipher, is that 791,000 people visit you three times a day, which means that...
Yeah, I mean, wild stuff.
It's more than wild. It's wonderful because I guess people go back to your site recognizing that it gets updated throughout the day, and they come to your site three times on average a day, actually five times a day they check it out, so that they get to see the latest information that you're uploading, which is not something that can happen in print media because the print media doesn't have that capacity. They publish once, the news is from the night before, and nothing from today, so that actually people reading print in all reality, and this is evident by the figures that you were able to extrapolate, are out of time. They're off 24 hours. It's
yes, they're out of time. But the problem is that the major news websites have paywalls. So you have to subscribe to them to get the notice, whereas I don't have a paywall or anything. You can just see it. And that is a much better news service because, unfortunately, advertising has drives the major newspapers, and they want to just get paid for their content. Nothing wrong with that, but the advertisers don't support the independent news websites because we report the truth.
Well, that's very lucid. Again, you're fading in and out. I don't know why.
Okay. But
the thing that's fascinating about what you're saying is really quite logical, and I don't know why print media is still regarded as, you know, the place to be, because a lot of people are online. And they're online because they want to get the latest news. That's why you have so many people returning to your website 5 times a day in order to see what the latest news is, because there's no other outlet to get that information.
Right. And
you know,
people,
I know every day.
Yeah. Yes, and
you
not
know?
Only that, but if what is advantageous is when Governor Hochul puts out an emergency message about the weather on a Saturday night, I can get it up there at a time when people might be able to, you know, make plans that they have already made or not travel if they don't want to. I mean, timeliness is what is really missing in newspaper and in most website coverage. They're usually behind, and the problem is that Governor Hochul really performed really well over the weekend on these storms both weeks, and actually put up roads that were closed on the morning when you had to know that.
Exactly.
She put them up Sunday night. Nobody does that.
No.
You know,
well,
and,
that's a beauty.
It was really good.
That's a beauty of her regime, and she is aware of it. She's sensitive to it, and that's what people need, and that's what people want, and that's what people hope to get. We were never used to that before she came into office. We never had that.
Well, yeah, all right. Well, Governor Cuomo did get a lot of. I think he won an Emmy for his reports on COVID because they were every day and they were up to the minute. And he really pioneered that. And it is unfortunate that his ability to do that was compromised for what reasons we do not know, since nobody's prosecuted.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I
don't remember exactly what the rationale was for him somehow losing I don't know, his juice, and I don't remember. Maybe it's because of the medication I'm taking, but I just don't remember the rationale for it and why he was, like, literally pushed out the door, which is amazing to me.
Well, it was a very the legislature did not like him because he ran things. And their egos were punctured, and they did not want more Cuomo. So apparently charges were made, and we have yet to find out whether those charges, court cases have been brought. And when you don't bring your case to court, that means perhaps there is no case. You have to go to court. Going to make that kind of stuff somehow. But see, that hasn't made. He is gone. And now what is happening? We have had a couple of really bad weeks of weather, really devastating Orange County. And we have had absolutely no peeps from the legislators up in Albany about this.
About what?
They haven't made any
no peeps from
about the disaster in Orange and Rockland counties. Brought about by the rain, washed out roads, etc. They
just haven't been commenting on it. Yeah, we haven't
heard from them.
Does it make sense why we're not hearing from them? It's not they didn't cause the rains and the flooding, so why are they so reluctant?
They should have some input on their the territories that they represent.
Yeah, and they should tell us
at
if
least
they have
they
any plans.
Yes, right. Yes.
Yeah, if they have any plans to mediate some of these concerns or how long it would take. But nobody's going to blame them for it. Yeah.
Well, how are they going to – when are they going to get that fixed over there? The road damage is unbelievable.
That's what I understand.
And we have the water problem. How good is the delivery of the water systems? How much were they damaged? That goes underground, but we have no clue on that yet. And we know that they're delivering meals over there. Fox 5 News had that on this morning, but other than that, you know, you're not getting much longer term feel for how long this is going to be a problem. And not only that, but where's FEMA when you need them?
Well, that's true as well. But I guess FEMA's not going to be called in until our elected officials do their job, and that is make a public notice of what the concerns are to the best of their ability. They don't know how to fix the water or how to fix the roads, but they have the access to all the different departments, so they could ask them, well, what do we need based on what's happened?
Damage assessment. Damage assessment.
Yeah.
You're absolutely
right.
I'm worried that the water supply is lucid.
I mean, why aren't they lucid? Don't they understand what they have to do? And you want to know
one
the truth. If there's such a failure of the people who are incumbent at this particular time, I hope the public will remember, and unfortunately I don't think they will, that these people have dropped the ball when we need them the most. Because we can't afford to have roads that are destroyed or somehow diminished in capacity. Because what does that do to the community? And we have to ratchet everything up because evidently the climate change has caused everything to go haywire. We're not used to this. Nobody is. Doesn't matter what country.
No.
It's unbelievable.
No.
Why don't they step up
in
to the plate? I don't get it. You would step up.
That's another thing.
Official?
Yes.
I know I would.
Well, what are the long-term ramifications of this? The real estate market in Orange and Rockland is going to be hurt.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
But it
may actually be the opposite is that it may cause other areas in Westchester County to actually have valuations rise because there is no other option further north. So
absolutely.
Who knows how
the
this is going to work out?
Prices are going to go up in Westchester on houses.
Probably.
So
probably.
That's going to hurt
probably.
The market too. People will buy them, but the people who need houses, the persons that are young, starting out in their careers, starting out their children, the mortgages that they can't get are too high now. They're running about 6, 7%, and nobody's paying attention to this.
Do you think that based on the economic reality, are we going to lose our children to outside of Westchester, outside of Rockland? Where are they going to go? Are they going to move to Connecticut? Are they going to move up to Putnam?
Yes, I think Connecticut is a good choice. I don't think there's an income tax in Connecticut. But this is something we haven't figured out yet. Because we were very fortunate the rain didn't park over Westchester because we'd have a lot more damage.
Correct. That's very true. I was surprised.
Because the Orange and Rockland, very low in population. So there wasn't as much to go wrong, but everything possible did go wrong in those two counties. Fortunately, there's not much loss of life, but that's about the only positive.
Really interesting.
But I mean, this is a real test.
Absolutely. You know, I want to ask you about something else, because when I went to the White Plains Citizen that reported WPCNR.com website, your website, I noticed that you also had an interview with Milagros Lacuna. I haven't spoken to her in years. She looks gorgeous, like she did years ago, the way I remember her. And she's absolutely breathtakingly beautiful, at least in my mind. But, you know, how did you reconnect? That's really beautiful.
Well, I realized
she still lives in White Plains, doesn't she? She still lives in White Plains.
Yes, she does. And the reason I interviewed her was this is sort of a real seminal moment in Westchester history and, of course, White Plains history. And she was on the council for 12 years. She has a senior view of how the city has changed and she talked about it and also pointed out some of the problems that young people have today becoming upwardly mobile as we were because the opportunities have been shut down. They really have, you know, many have loans for colleges and which not much is being done, but there is some aid that happened over the weekend, but it's not enough. You've got colleges that treat them shabbily, and but they can do no wrong, can they?
John, again, try to do something about your volume. It's really off, really bad. I wanted to ask you about something else. It just works better for a moment, but then somehow it dissipates. I don't know.
How's that?
You wrote an article.
Better?
An article about the appellate court ruling in New York, which redraws the congressional district for 2024. And how do you think that that's going to affect the, you know, the whole process and the capacity of our incumbents to get reelected, or maybe it won't? I don't know if it will or it won't. What do you think? Well, I guess we lost. I'm not sure. No, it looks like we lost John for a moment. So bear with me a second here. Let me see if I can dial him up. 1 second. Okay, let's see. Whoops, 1 second. All right, hopefully this will work. All right, bear with me a moment. I'm going to try to get a hold of John because somehow or another we lost him. Like, it was like a disconnect. We'll see if we can get a hold of him. Okay, it's ringing. So
hi, here we are.
Hi, we somehow lost you. So I wanted to ask you about the appellate court ruling, which redrew the congressional districts again for the 2024 election. And how do you think that's going to affect our incumbents? Will they have an opportunity, or it's like starting from scratch for them?
Well, it depends on how the districts are redrawn, which they're about ready to start doing. And the big question is what is going to be accepted? They're going to be redrawn by the independent, an independent committee. So it's not, they're not going to be redrawn by the Democrats, who obeyed the law in getting it confirmed, and that costs 4 seats in New York in the House. And the reason the Republicans now control the House is because of the stupidity of New York State Legislature in trying to ram through districts that were not approved by the right process. They just did not follow the law. So now we have to redo them. Now, how is that going to affect? It depends on how they redraw it. Will this really affect the Lawler district, the congressional district of Mike Lawler? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, what they would like to do, they would like to close him out somehow and give him more of the liberal White Plains area, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But that is what every incumbent now faces. And who knows? I mean, you've got Mondaire Jones trying to run now for Lawler's seat. I mean, that's going to be an interesting problem because they rejiggered that district to get rid of Mondaire Jones because they didn't like him. The Democrats did that because they did not like him because he defeated Elliot Engel, one of the most do-nothing congressmen ever.
Mm.
But I mean, because he didn't do much. That's he shook the president's hand every year at the State of the Union message. That's what he did regularly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Want to ask you about something else that you wrote, or rather Dr. Caitlin Rivers wrote. So this goes back to the whole idea of the COVID issue.
Mm-hmm.
It does look like there's a new new anomaly of COVID, which is infecting people again. And yet somehow people are not wearing masks. But then again, I'm really uncertain. Are the masks important or not important? I don't even know anymore. It's so confusing. They keep changing, best practice. And so I don't even know. You know, I wear the mask. I don't have a problem in the heat or anything else. It's you could breathe through the mask, so I don't know. But do you think people have gotten over COVID already? I don't think there's
people think it is over. People think it is over because nobody is giving us really reliable information on it in the public eye. I mean, COVID is never mentioned in the county executive's update. There's one this afternoon. And in fact, we had 212 new infections in Westchester that are lab verified last week, Saturday.
Yes.
That was up from 133 the previous week. And so this is the second straight week in the middle of July. And each of the 133 a week ago infected 1.6 people, which means we will maybe have 640 for the month of July, much better than last year when we had 10,000.
But it's
still spreading, and we don't know what the invisible positives are. The invisible positives, a term I coined, is those people who test positive with an antigen test but don't want to have to stay home and don't want to you know, lose their jobs or have to get docked pay. There's many reasons why people don't get it. I don't know why, but they aren't. And if you are, we ran an infection rate of about 5.5% of all tested last week, and the testing was only about 400 people a day. That's verified lab tests. Okay, so you have if 5% of them, if you have 2,000, well, that's 200 a day. If you have 5,000, that's 300 a day. If you tested that many.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, the disease is easy to track if you want to track it.
Only if you want to, that's true. We've only got about 3 minutes left before our next guest, so I wanted to ask you about this article that you posted, Westchester's Diverse Abilities Job Fair, which is going to take place tomorrow, July 18th, as noted at the White Plains Citizenet Reporter.com website. From 10 o'clock in the morning till 4 in the afternoon at the Westchester County Center. Am I forgetting that we've had this before, or is it something new? This is for diverse people who don't have.
I think this is the first real full-blown attempt at this really promote employment of disabled people and get them to search it out. And I applaud the county executive for doing this, because we have labor problems in this county. We don't have enough people for the jobs and that are out there. And this disabled people are excellent workers if you get them in the right niche.
Exactly, because they talk about people who have hearing loss issues or are blind, different residential opportunities they mentioned. I don't know what the SPARC is, SPARC, but whatever it is, this is something that hopefully people will attend tomorrow, the Diverse Abilities Job Fair. I'm glad that you were able to post it. I didn't get this information at all. So good for you.
Well, that is because it's posted only to the media. By the county. So posted only to the media and in the updates. And then when I note them, I put stuff like that up. But what's interesting is the newspapers do a lousy job of promoting these special events. They bury them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't understand. Like, I think we're definitely the media. We're pretty well known. So I don't know why we don't get it. But I'm going to give Latimer's office a call today and see what the problem is, because I think I think we're worthy of being included if they want this to be noted. That's for sure. Any last words from you, John, because we're going to need to get going?
Yes, well, the thing that really was a story that nobody covered last week was the Department of Homeland Security arriving in New York. There's a request from Governor Hochul and George Latimer for him to set up interim asylum courts for the migrants that are being housed in Westchester, and also to allow them to be employed. And apparently, he never spoke with them.
Wow.
He ignored them. There's no indication that any reporter asked him a question about that.
Yeah, exactly.
But, of course, it was a different subject of the press conference. And, you know, the reporters are afraid to ask off-topic. And
so it goes.
But I thought that was I thought that was terrible that he didn't do that. It was so easy. Just give him a call.
Well, anyway, we're going to have to let you go, John. Thank you for your time. We have to take our next guest. So be well and stay healthy. Give my best to you.
Okay, and the high-energy Hezzy is back.
Thank you so much. Be well. Bye.
Right. Good. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, there's John, and let's bring in Michael Edelman. Michael Edelman, good morning. Thanks for your patience. I appreciate it. How are you, sir?
That's no problem, Hezzy. More important, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm feeling better. I'm getting about more, and I think the walking has helped me tremendously. So thank goodness. So I'm very, very thankful. And my doctors are exceptional because they're keeping me here. I think without them, it would be long over. So it goes. How are you doing yourself?
We're doing good. Thank you.
That's wonderful. Really wonderful.
111 degree heat, though. That's, you know.
That's
what
the
it
thing
is.
I wanted to ask you, even though you're not in meteorology or anything like that or weather patterns.
Yeah.
Are people focusing blame on the national government, do you think, or on anybody? I mean, is anyone being criticized for the change in weather? Because nobody's prepared on a national, on an international level. Nobody knows how to even contend with this. So
well,
is it beyond
our... Well, that's because for decades, right-wingers have been spewing the notion that climate change is a creature of left-wing political people, when in fact we have the warmest temperature in the oceans we've ever had, and the storms that we're seeing are far greater than we've ever had, and the temperatures across the globe are setting records. So whether you believe in climate change and man-made involvement, you have to people understand now that the climate is changing. It's becoming hotter.
Exactly. I was shocked that people went to, Death Valley because they wanted to be there for the temperature because it was so high. It was like, I would have probably dropped dead even thinking about it. So,
it's too high for me. When they give you the temperature in Florida, they give you the real feel. So the temperature could be 93, but the real feel is 111.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
In Death Valley, the real temperature was probably 115, and the real feel might have been 130.
Mm. I want to ask you about something else. The National Security Advisor has defended the United States' moral authority, that's the way they put it, to send cluster bombs to Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't the government doing a better job in promoting, the integrity of what they do? It seems like the left says one thing and the right says another thing, and they're just fighting one another. But why do we have a balance? Because the White House can do a better job, can't they, in promoting the positions of the president and so on and so forth?
Or
are there two different countries and we just speak to one group or the other?
What's interesting, there are two different countries in the Republican Party alone, because there's a group of Republicans that are totally against helping Ukraine at all. They want to see Russia win.
Yes.
Tucker Carlson.
Yes, I've heard that.
Matt Gaetz, they're all suggesting that Ukraine is not worthy of being a country, and they fail to support. They won't support the idea that the United States has an obligation and if it wants to be a world leader and a world power, to defend democracies against encroachment by dictators. So these cluster bombs are not going to be used to hit civilian targets in Russia. They're going to be used to bomb Russian positions in the Ukraine.
Yes.
And neither the United States nor Ukraine nor Russia are signatories to the treaty that bans cluster bombs. So in terms of moral authority, that argument goes out the window because, you know, the only thing here that's important is that Russia has been bombing hospitals, apartment houses, trying to scare Ukrainians. That's a war crime. that Putin is committing over and over again. You're not supposed to, in warfare, go after civilian populations, only military targets. And he has certainly decided not to abide by that provision of the Geneva Conference. So cluster bombs or no cluster bombs, you've got a dictator on one side trying to take the freedom away from a nation that has an elected parliament, elected president, etc. So giving them the ability to defend themselves is all this is. This is not this is not a war of aggression. This is a war of defense as far as Ukraine is concerned. So there's no moral equivalency.
I wanted to ask you also, that's really quite brilliantly expressed, I want you to know. I want to ask you as well about John Kerry. He's a special U.S. envoy that went to China looking to revive climate diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize it. Do these ambassadors, usually do they have to be very wealthy in order to be able to become ambassadors?
You got to be one of two
things. Because it costs a fortune of money.
Yeah, you got to be, like, I was counsel to Ambassador John Loeb Jr., who was made ambassador to Denmark, but that was after he gave $500,000 to Ronald Reagan's campaign.
So you have to be
two things. You have to be well connected to the president, and that can be a number of ways to do that, in terms of helping on the campaign or endorsements or blah, blah, blah. Or you have to be very wealthy and make a gift that, is enough to keep people, enough for retired people to live on.
that's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm not going to get one of those positions, that's for sure, because I can't afford it. But whatever.
Neither am I.
So it goes. Want to ask you about something
else.
Although
I have to tell you, Bessie, being ambassador is a great deal, because if you're ambassador to a nation, when you fly to the nation to take your post, you've got all kinds of people running around doing the research for you, meeting with the other side. So you're just you're the head of the head of the idea, the complex.
You
get everybody
the
honor. Works for you. They all work for you to make you look good.
Okay. Well, that's something. If I had only known that when I was much younger, maybe I could have elevated myself to that perspective.
Well, you
want
to be ambassador to the United Kingdom.
that would have been special. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Wanted to ask you about Russia's conduct, particularly their halting the Black Sea grain deal that they had with Ukraine, because Ukraine is a very large producer of grain, and Russia permitted the grain to be shipped through the Black Sea. It was last year, and they also ship grain. I don't know what the difference is between the two of them as far as the amount of that they grow and the amount that they ship, but it's caused unbelievable harm to African countries because they don't have the food. So, and the prices have gone through the roof. And the world seems to be pretty quiet about that. So why is Russia being given, an okay? By not being criticized, because they're the ones that are stopping the ships from going through the Black Sea to get to Africa, and the African countries aren't saying very much either.
I think the intention of Putin is to prevent Ukraine from making any money while it's fighting a war with him, so that they can't buy, guns and ammo and tanks and armor and everything that a country needs to win a war. So.
Right.
I don't know what the answer is to that.
I don't know either. And also, what's happening with the Wagner Group, the mercenaries? They seem to they supposedly Prigozhin left from Russia to Belarus and so on and so forth. But I don't even know if he's there anymore. And supposedly they're more military or paramilitary groups that Putin's permitting to grow since Prigozhin was left to the side. isn't he causing conceivably a being toppled from government in case somebody goes against him because they have the paramilitary capacity to do so? It just seems
like a
stupid move.
I think Putin thought originally that the Wagner Group, Prigozhin, were going to be allies in his fight against Ukraine because it's a 25,000-member organization, highly trained in warfare. But we don't know why Prigozhin was doing what he was doing, saying that the Russian top defense minister should go and the top guy in the army should go. And then all of a sudden, as they were getting close to Moscow, by close I mean 150 miles away, he stopped and took his guys into Belarus, and now we don't know where he is. The president of Belarus said he's not in Belarus at this time. He hasn't spoken publicly since he did that. He could be alive, but he could not be alive. It's a possibility that he fell out of a 10th-floor window like all of the other people around Putin who were disputing Putin's absolute power. So we don't really know where he is.
Exactly. Fascinating stuff that's going on around the world. Let's look at what's happening here locally in the United States. DeSantis' presidential campaign is cutting their staff. It seems that he's got financial pressures because I don't know why. I guess he's not raising enough money or whatever. So he's floundering, even though he claimed to be a presidential contender, but it doesn't look like he's got it. He doesn't have the juice.
Well, DeSantis's campaign is falling apart. He's getting no traction in the polls.
Yeah.
Since Trump was indicted in New York and in the documents case, Trump's been going up and DeSantis has been going down. There's about 30 points between them. So as practical matter, DeSantis' campaign is over. And to prove that point to you, it becomes apparent that one of his big supporters, Rupert Murdoch, who thought DeSantis was going to be a substitute for Trump, has abandoned him. So you can say bye-bye, Ron.
Yes, bye-bye, Ron. So it doesn't look like there is a challenger to Donald Trump. Or is there?
No, there's a challenger. It's just that challenger is having a very tough time breaking in with 35% of the Republican Party that is Trump's base. But, you know, the debate is coming up in about 25 days in August.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're going to see Chris Christie on the stage, and he's been battering Donald Trump around. He's taking him on.
He's quite eloquent as a speaker.
Well, he is eloquent, and he's talented, and he's not afraid, because he loses nothing, to take Donald Trump on frontally. And he's been doing that, but there's no way Chris Christie can get the 30% of the Republican Party that still loves Donald Trump, or 35, whatever it is, 35%, to support him. Here's the kicker, and this is what you have to keep your eye on.
Yes.
If Donald Trump is the nominee of the Republican Party and Joe Biden is the nominee of the Democratic Party, who wins in November? Who gets the suburban middle-class women and, you know, small business people that live outside the cities?
I would think it is Biden, but I don't know if the president's office is doing enough to promote what he's accomplishing.
He's probably accomplished more than any president in the first term in decades.
I agree.
The CHIPS Act,
I agree.
The Inflation Reduction Act, abortion rights. He has made it clear that he is on the side of middle of the road voters, whether or not they are Democrat and independent or Republican. So now 70% of the Democrats don't want him running again, nevertheless. However, he beat Trump once. He'll beat him again.
Yeah, well, yeah. You said that for months. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's and why aren't people considering why aren't Democrats considering supporting the president? What's their beef? The ones that aren't. Do we know?
Age.
Age. But Trump is
age.
Also the same age.
Correct.
Trump is also the same age.
Well, the people that are citing age are not taking. They're not taking the age of Donald Trump. Hey, listen, if I had to bet on who would get a stroke first, Biden, who is in very good shape, he's not overweight,
yeah.
He exercises every morning, or Donald Trump, who sits on his butt, watches television and eating McDonald's, I'd bet the first stroke is Donald before way before Biden.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's the way it seems. So what should we look forward to as things unfurl at the moment or unfold? Are we just going to be at each other's throats as a nation with different people, different party lines? Are we growing together or are we growing apart? It seems like we're growing apart from my perspective. I don't see us coalescing and growing back together again. There are too many divisions in the country. Gun control, and yet there's so much gun violence, which is insanity. I don't even know why we hold on to that. Why do people need guns? Because they're just killing people, children, including adults.
Well, the question people need guns is answered by the people who have guns by saying that they want to protect themselves against crime and against the government. That's that old a philosophy that somehow holds that the government's coming after you eventually and you ought to be able to defend yourself. However, you know, the Supreme Court is doing a lot of damage to the American way of life, whether it's the affirmative action decision, whether it's the abortion decision, which overturned 50 years of practice because they've got three justices who are slightly to the right of Attila the Hun.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see that coming, to be honest with you. I didn't think it would ever get to that point.
Well, these social issues shouldn't be, in my opinion, shouldn't be the primary concern of the federal government. So here you have a situation where after 50 years, Roe versus Wade was overturned. The conservative have always argued that the state should determine whether or not you have a right to abortion and in what week has to go by until you're entitled to seek one. But meanwhile, when they got rid of Roe v. Wade, every state is doing it differently. Some states, like Florida, have enacted a 6-week ban.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
People don't know women don't know they're pregnant for 6 weeks in many cases.
Exactly, they don't. Yeah, that's the way the body works.
The more
works.
The Republican Party talks about that kind of nonsense, the more Democratic women, more independent women will vote for the Democrat.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be nice because it's getting to be ridiculous because, law is governing the conduct of women and they can't even comply with any of these rules and regulations. If they were molested or if there was incest involved and they got pregnant, they don't even know that they're pregnant. And I don't know why we think it's so pertinent to burden a woman who didn't want to have a child in case she was violated. Why?
Well, because if you're an evangelical, you believe that life begins at conception.
Yes.
And that should be illegal to take a life, even though that life is not viable. And at 6 weeks, the fetus is not viable. It cannot live outside the mother's body. So here's the thing. For 50 years, conservatives have been screaming that the state should have the responsibility to police abortions. Now that Roe v. Wade has been turned, now they want a federal law banning abortions or federal law stating how many weeks. So independent women and moderate Republican women say, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. You can't take that away from us. So that's going to cut against the Republican candidate.
Are there so many Republicans that would approve of this sort of law to be put in place and or restrictions on women with getting an abortion or not getting an abortion? And yet, I think it was only a few days ago, the FDA approved a pill where you could, over-the-counter, which would create cause an abortion.
Yeah.
So I don't understand who's right, and how do we approve something if we claim that the law denies that, and now we're going to make it available for everybody through a pharmacy, whatever, to provide over the counter.
In the states that have an abortion ban, it would be illegal to sell that kind of product. It would be illegal to sell that drug.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, so those particular places where you could conceivably get it in one state may not be available in the state that forbids it. Wow.
Yeah.
So then that's going to be a big be a business that will be done through the mails.
Mm-hmm.
It's insanity. And what's the purpose of controlling women? I don't get it. What is it that we want
to
do?
Well, you have to,
I don't know any woman I could ever control. If anything,
you're
they're
not
controlling me.
Evangelical. Who's reading the Bible literally? Kind of like what the Arab nations do. They read the Quran literally. So women can't get education. They have to wear a headdress. They can't expose their bodies in public and all of that. Well, evangelicals are just as bad. Okay, so they believe that the man is the king of the house, and the woman's job is having children, and that's it.
Mm. Yeah.
So when you have that as a religious base, You're never going to be brought into the 21st century.
No.
It's going to be 100 years for those states. All these old people have to die because the kids aren't on their wavelength in terms of issues. The kids
don't
want to ban abortion. They're not interested in anything other than their economic well-being. And these social issues, LGBTQ issues, that Ron DeSantis is pounding at, they don't recognize that as an issue.
No. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Well, why that becomes an issue for him? It's just trashing LGBTQ people. For what reason? You don't have to like them, so don't like them. You don't have to befriend everybody.
You have to understand the reason is biblical.
Respect. Yes,
The reason that people are willing to follow somebody like Ron, it's biblical. The reason is they think that the Bible should be taken literally.
Mm.
I had that discussion, by the way, 50 years ago when I was in the armed services and I was training as an army medic. You know, when we were finished with dinner, the guys would argue about political stuff, right? And, I was arguing with one guy, and his response was, I forget what the issue is, frankly, but his response was he said, the Bible doesn't lie. And there you have it.
And that's it.
That's it. The Bible doesn't lie. So if the Bible says X, even though we're, 1,500 years later, it doesn't make a difference. The Bible, I don't want to get into religion with them, but I try to tell them that the Bible wasn't written, by the Lord. It was written by men, and it was written 100 years after Jesus Christ died.
Mm-hmm.
100 years after.
Yeah. Oh, God. So somehow religion has gotten a little bit out of whack. In Orthodox Judaism, they cling to similar concepts. In a modern Orthodox society, women wear a hairpiece to cover their hair, as if that's going to change their appearance to such an extent that men are not going to get excited by seeing a woman without anything over her head. It's the same thing like a Muslim woman wearing a hijab. It's the same thing. They're all doing
it
the same thing.
Biblical adherence to what's in the Bible, an interpretation that is strict. It doesn't make a difference what religion you're talking about.
Exactly.
Right? It doesn't make a difference. Whether it's Islam, whether it's Christianity, whether it's Judaism, they all have the same issue.
Yeah. So it probably all came from one or the other or the third, whatever. You know, I don't know what came first. It doesn't really matter, but everybody is thinking basically the same, except they claim their God is to be recognized by one name or the other. It is truly amazing.
Yeah, even though all three of those religions that I mentioned are Abrahamic religions.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
So why do we hate each other? Why do we hate each other so much? Why do we hate each other so much? Where did that come from? Is animosity, is it richer in one
radical,
than the other?
So, radical interpretations of the Bible or of the Quran are easy for people to do because that means that they've stopped thinking themselves. They're letting the Bible think for them.
I guess that's the easy way out.
It also enables cult leaders to emerge.
Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable. Well, any last words from you, Mr. Edelman, as always?
No, but
I'm going to
stay inside today. I'm staying inside. It's 111.
Good for you. Exactly. I think that's a smart move. I wouldn't in my right mind go to Yosemite National Park or anywhere else to just see what the weather is like.
Yeah.
Europe is
just see how
is
high
also boiling.
Right.
140 degrees in the shade. I guess there is no mechanism of any kind of, we don't know even how to respond to the weather change. And probably our children or our grandchildren are going to be suffering for the rest of their lives.
Well, we're going to have to respond. The way to fix it is spend money to prevent floods, for example, at Miami Beach floods, even if it isn't a rainstorm. New York will flood.
Right.
You remember Hurricane Sandy? Remember what Hurricane Sandy did to New York? The water was in the subway tunnels.
Yes. Yeah.
And that could happen again.
Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable. Well, there are a lot of things to do, that's for sure.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Well, Mr. Edelman, as usual, thank you so, so much. Thank you for making the time. It's most appreciated.
No problem.
Be well.
Yep.
All the best
to you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye. It doesn't get better than Michael Edelman, international and national political analyst and pundit. Most people can't do both, which is, I guess, part of his eloquence. That's for sure. Bear with me a moment. Looks like someone's calling in. Let's see who that caller is. Good morning, caller. Hello. Hello, are you calling in?
Are you finished with the bagel?
No, I guess they're finished with the bagel, so we're going to hang up on him. That's that's Michael Edelman, I guess, wondering about the bagel. So let's look at what's going on. There are quite a few things which are truly, truly fascinating. And this is the latest news from Ukraine. Evidently, the Kremlin says that the grain deal has been halted after the attack in Crimea. So Russia has accused Ukraine of attacking a vital bridge that links Russia and Crimea, possibly with the United States and United Kingdom help. And that's a jump, possibly with U.S. and U.K. help. But anyway, Moscow says there is no link between the grain deal decision and the attack. So Russia says that the U.S. and Britain may have colluded with Ukraine and Crimea bridge incident. I think that's an allegation that they have yet to prove. Russian authorities say two people die in what they call a terror attack on the Crimea bridge. Again, Kyiv claims that gains last week near Bakhmut and in southern Ukraine. So evidently that's what they're suggesting. Last-minute efforts are underway to renew the Black Sea grain deal before it expires late Monday night. So that's already late Monday night over there. And Zelensky said, Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky was quoted as saying that everything should be done in order for grain exports to continue through the Black Sea. So even without, bear with me a second here, even without the Russian Federation, everything must be done so that we can use the Black Sea corridor. And he says we are not afraid. Spokesperson Serhiy Nikiforov was quoted Zelensky as saying, we are approached by companies, ship owners, and they say that they are ready to go if Ukraine lets them go and Turkey continues to let them through, then everything is ready to continue supplying grain. Nikiforov was quoted President as saying. So, that's the deal. Russia on Monday, today, said that it was exiting the landmark deal brokered with Turkey and the United Nations to unblock deliveries from Ukrainian ports in the Black Sea. So that's the thing. And the reason it's pertinent is because Ukraine is one of the most powerful exporters of grain, particularly to Africa. And when Ukrainian grain cannot be sold or shipped by the Black Sea to Africa, the people that are suffering, of course, will be the Ukrainians because financially they're not getting paid for their supplies. But more importantly, the countries that need the grain and not getting them are finding that their people are starving because they have no means to get food. So it is outrageous that the world is pretty much silent with respect to Russia, and it hasn't been, and Russia is not being finger-pointed as the culprit in this circumstance. And this is like really mind-boggling. What if people are afraid to say, hey, Russia, I know you don't want Ukraine to make money by selling their grain, but you shouldn't be permitted to starve people because you have a war situation with Ukraine. It just doesn't make sense. Could they afford to be to not have food? What are they going to do? It's absolute insanity that this is permitted, and that there's very little talk of what's going on. And that's really, really frightening. European Union Commission President Ursula von der Leyen today called Russia's decision to suspend the Black Sea grain export deal a cynical move, quote unquote. Von der Leyen added that the European Union would keep working on efforts to ensure food security for poor nations, which are, to be honest with you, basically in Africa. Quote, she says, I strongly condemn Russia's cynical move to terminate the Black Sea Grain Initiative, she said. She didn't say she tweeted this issue. And Brussels is seeking to mend cracks over trade and Russia's invasion of Ukraine with its membership. Russian Grain Union vows to keep exporting. It seems that the Russian Grain Exporting Union, RusGrain, or Russian Grain, has said its members are still preparing to keep supplying customers despite Moscow saying it would halt the grain deal. Moscow is the largest supplier of wheat to the world market, and all contractual obligations of Russian grain exporters will be fulfilled, it said. Well, Russia earlier said that the deal had de facto ended after the last ship left Ukraine under the agreement on Sunday. Well, Turkey's president thinks that Putin wants the grain deal extended. Well, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has said he believes his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, does want to extend the Green Deal that allows food and fertilizer to be exported from Russia and Ukraine via the Black Sea. Erdogan said that he hoped talks between Turkish Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan and Russia's Sergei Lavrov about the Green Deal would be productive. Erdogan said he would discuss the situation, including the export of Russian fertilizer and with Putin when they meet in person. While it had been suggested that it would be during an expected meeting in August, Erdogan did not rule out holding talks earlier. Berlin is urging Moscow to rethink halting the Green Deal. Germany has urged Russia to return to a deal to allow the export of Ukrainian grain via the Black Sea after Moscow said it had, quote, de facto ended, end quote. Moscow made the announcement hours before the deal was due to expire, noting it was essential for food security in many of the world's poorer regions. Quote, we continue to call on Russia to allow further extension of the Green Deal, government spokeswoman Christian Hoffmann told reporters. Hoffmann added that this, quote, conflict should be carried out on the backs not be carried out on the backs of the poorest on this planet. And after the Kremlin made its announcement, Russian news agency said Moscow had notified Turkey, Ukraine, and the United Nations it was against extending the deal. Well, so Russia says it is halting the grain deal. So Russia said it has halted a deal that allows much-needed grain to flow from Ukraine to countries in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov announced holding the deal in a conference call with reporters. He said that Russia would return to the deal set to expire on Monday after its demands are met. Quote, when the part of the Black Sea deal related to Russia is implemented, Russia will immediately return to the implementation of the deal, Peskov had said. Russia says the halting of the deal has nothing to do with the attack on a bridge linking Russia to Crimea earlier on Monday. Turkey brokered the agreement to let food leave Ukrainian ports via the Black Sea, and a separate agreement facilitated the movement of Russian food and fertilizer and Western sanctions. However, Russia has complained that restrictions on shipping and insurance have hampered its food and fertilizer exports. Despite this, analysts and export data says that Russia has been shipping record amounts of wheat and fertilizers. The agreement was last renewed for 60 days back in May, with Moscow also pushing back before finally accepting the extension. Well, Russia says that the United States, Britain may be involved in the bridge attack. So they're saying may. The Russian Foreign Ministry has accused Ukraine of carrying out an attack on the bridge between Russia and Crimea with a possible involvement of Britain and the United States. Quote, if a Western origin of the surface drones that attacked the bridge, as well as the role of Western countries in planning, sponsoring, and carrying out this operation is revealed, confirmed their complicity in the terrorist activities of the Kyiv regime, the ministry said. Well, why don't you just prove it one way or the other if it can be proved? Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova earlier made the assertion that Washington and London were involved outright, but did not provide evidence to support them. Decisions are made by Ukrainian officials and the military with the direct participation of American and British intelligence agencies and policy and politicians, she said. Later, Russian authorities described the incident on the Kerch Bridge as a, quote, terror attack, and blamed Ukraine. Well, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told Russian news agencies, quote, we know the cause. We know those behind this terror attack. Again, but no proof. According to Russian news agency Peskov, stated, quote, all this is the work of the Kiev regime, end quote. Well, Russian state media cited the country's anti-terrorist committee, saying that Ukraine attacked the Crimean bridge using unmanned drones on the water's surface. Russia's investigative committee said Ukrainian, quote, special services, end quote, were responsible for the attack and that it had opened a criminal investigation. Oh, my goodness. So Ukraine media cite sources saying that Kiev is involved. At least two Ukrainian media organizations have now cited unnamed sources saying that Ukraine's domestic security agency and military were behind the bridge incident. Public broadcaster Sushilny and the media outlet Ukrainska Pravda said that the security service of Ukraine, the SBU, and the Navy were involved. Sushilny cited its sources as saying that underwater drones were used to carry out the attack, but also quoted a Navy spokesman as saying he had no such information. The Agence France Press news agency also reported that Ukraine was behind the attacks based on a Ukrainian source. So, you know, we don't know what's going on here. Unbelievable. Russia's TASS news agency reports that rail movement has resumed after the incident on the Crimea Bridge. The agency said a train had left the Crimean city of Kursk and that it was on its way to Moscow via the bridge. Traffic on the bridge was earlier halted, although the extent of the damage was not immediately clear. The 12-mile bridge, which spans the Kursk Strait, is the main land connection between Russia and the Crimean Peninsula. In October, it was damaged by a truck bomb and required months of repairs before resuming full service. So, Ukraine reports its gains near Bakhmut. Seems Ukraine says its forces retook about 2.7 square miles of land around the eastern city of Bakhmut in the past week. Russian forces had seized that area near the city back in May. Deputy Defense Minister Hana Malyar said on Telegram that the gains had been made possible, improvements of the operational position and alignment of the front line in the Bakhmut region or direction, end quote. Malyar said that Ukrainian troops made advances every day on the southern flank around Bakhmut last week. She said that overall during their counteroffensive against occupying Russian forces, Ukraine's forces have liberated 31 square kilometers of territory in the area. Malyar said that overall the advances brought the total territory recaptured in the counteroffensive to more than 200 square kilometers, and that includes gains in the south where Kyiv troops have recaptured 100 square kilometers seeking to advance to Berdyansk and Melitopol. And Ukraine claims that the Ukraine military says that the bridge incident may be a Russian provocation. Spokesperson for Ukraine's Southern Military Command, Natalia Humenyuk, said that the, quote, emergency, end quote, situation on the bridge linking Crimea and Russia could be an act of provocation on Moscow's side. The incident killed two people and a child, was injured, and is now reported to be in intensive care. The creation of such provocations, which the occupation or occupying authorities of Crimea report immediately very loudly, is a typical way of solving problems by authorities of Crimea and the aggressor country, Humenyuk told national broadcaster Rada. So that seems to be the situation there. Okay. One second. Okay. All right, bear with me a moment. Needed to answer a couple of things because we can't do the radio and answer phones at the same time. That's how it works. Well, I just don't have that capacity or that gift to be able to do more than one thing at one time. Even though I think I may be multitasking, I don't know if that works quite as well. I mean, the term is better than the reality. What can I tell you? Okay, so let's just look at one second, a couple of other things that may be of value. Bear with me a second here. One second. Okay, one moment. Made a mistake here. 1 minute. Okay. One second. Okay, I'm sure you heard this in the first hour. It seems heat waves are scorching parts of three continents, and they threaten to break temperature records. Scorching weather gripping three continents on Sunday, whipping up wildfires and threatening to topple temperature records as the dire consequences of global warming take shape. So predictions of historic heat hung over swaths of Asia, Europe, and the United States. In the Vatican, 15,000 people braved sweltering temperatures to hear Pope Francis lead prayer, using parasols and fans to keep cool. But in their black robes, priests like Francois and Benda said that they were sweating like hell, quote unquote. 29-year-old said it felt hotter in St. Peter's Square than in his Democratic Republic of Congo diocese. In Japan, authorities issued heat stroke alerts to tens of millions of people in 20 of its 47 prefectures as near record high temperatures scorched large areas and torrential rain pummeled other regions. National broadcaster NHK warned the heat was life-threatening, with the capital and other places recording nearly 40 degrees Celsius. That's 104 degrees Fahrenheit, Japan's highest temperature ever, 41.1 degrees, first recorded in Kumagaya City in 2018, could be beaten, according to meteorological agency. That's going to be over 107.8 degrees. Now, some places experienced their highest temperatures in more than four decades Sunday, including Hirono town in Fukushima Prefecture, which is about 95 degrees. The U.S. National Weather Service warned a, quote, widespread and oppressive, end quote, heat wave in southern and western states was expected to peak, with more than 80 million people affected by excessive heat warning or heat advisories on Sunday. Dangerous heat continues across central California. Dehydration can be dangerous. Remember to drink plenty of water and reduce time in the sun. California, Death Valley, often among the hottest places on Earth, is also likely to register new peaks on Sunday, with the mercury possibly surpassing 54 degrees Celsius, so that's going to be over 125 degrees. Southern California is fighting numerous wildfires, including one in Riverside County that has burned more than 7,500 acres and prompted evacuation orders. In Europe, Italians were warned to prepare for, quote, the most intense heat wave of the summer and also one of the most intense of all time, end quote. Predictions of historic highs in the coming days led the health ministry to sound a red alarm for 16 cities, including Rome, Bologna, and Florence. Temperatures are likely to hit 40 degrees centigrade in Rome by Monday, 42 to 43 centigrade on Tuesday, and smashing the record of 40.5 degrees centigrade set back in August of 2007. So Sicily and Sardinia could wilt under temperatures as high as 48 degrees centigrade. The European Space Agency warned, quote, potentially the hottest temperatures ever recorded in Europe. The Acropolis in Athens one of Greece's top tourist attractions, closed for a third day running on Sunday during its hottest hours. In Romania, temperatures are expected to reach 39 degrees Celsius on Monday across most of the country. Little reprieve is forecast for Spain, where the Metropolitan Agency warned of a new heat wave on Monday through Wednesday, taking temperatures above 40 degrees Celsius in the Canary Islands and the southern Andalusia region. On La Palma Island, temperatures dropped on Saturday, helping firefighters battle a blaze that burns 5,000 hectares this weekend, forcing the evacuation of 4,000 people. And there are also killer rains. Despite the heat, parts of Asia have also been battered by torrential rain. In South Korea, rescuers on Sunday battled to reach people trapped in a flooded tunnel after heavy rains for the last 4 days triggered floods and landslides that killed at least 37 people and left 9 missing. The country is at the peak of its summer monsoon season, with more rain forecast through Wednesday. In northern Japan, on Sunday, a man was found dead in a flooded car a week after 7 people were killed in similar weather in the country's southwest. In northern India, relentless monsoon rains have reportedly killed at least 90 people following burning heat. Major flooding and landslides are common during India's monsoons, but experts say that climate change is increasing their frequency and severity. China on Sunday issued several temperature alerts warning of 40 to 45 degrees Celsius in the partly desert region of Xinjiang and 39 degrees Celsius in southern Guangxi region. U.S. climate envoy John Kerry arrived in the country on Sunday to restart stalled talks between the world's two biggest emitters of planet-warming gases. President Joe Biden's administration has identified the climate as an area for potential cooperation with Beijing despite the tensions elsewhere. It can be difficult to attribute a particular weather event to climate change, but many scientists insist that global warming linked dependence on fossil fuels is behind the intensification of heat waves. The European Union's climate monitoring service said the world saw its hottest June on record last month. So, my goodness, it is really bad stuff. One second here. All right, I wanted to check some other things for you. Bear with me a moment. This is really quite interesting. The United States has taken custody of a Russian agent from Estonia. The United States took custody on Friday, of an alleged Russian intelligence agent extradited from Estonia as the Biden administration pursues possible prisoner exchanges for United States detainees in Russia. So Vadim Konoshenkinok was arrested in Estonia late last year as he sought to cross the border into Russia, carrying semiconductors and U.S.-made ammunition for sniper rifles, according to charges filed against him. He was allegedly a central figure in a 7-person smuggling ring, which included 5 Russians and 2 Americans who operated, quote-unquote, under the direction of Russian intelligence services to obtain U.S. electronics and other goods restricted by U.S. export controls. U.S. officials said that more than a half a ton of U.S. origin ammunition was interdicted or seized from Konoshenkinok's operation. He faces up to 30 years in prison for conspiracy, violation of export controls, and smuggling and money laundering. Konoshenkinok, quote, allegedly provided cutting-edge American-developed technologies and ammunition to Russia for use in their illegal and unprovoked invasion of Ukraine, said the Justice Department's Andrew Adams. Konoshenkinok as extradition to the United States comes as Washington seeks to negotiate the return of U.S. citizens held by Moscow. They include Paul Whelan, a corporate security official convicted in a Russian court of espionage, and Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich, who is facing charges of espionage as well. The United States denies either was involved in spying, but has been in negotiation to see if they could be swapped for Russians that it holds. Quote, I'm serious about a prisoner exchange, end quote, Biden said on Thursday in Finland. Quote, I'm serious about doing all we can to free Americans who are being illegally held in Russia or anywhere else for that matter, and that process is underway, he said. Last December, the United States traded jailed Russian arms smuggler Viktor Bout for U.S. basketball star Brittany Griner, who was jailed in Russia months earlier on drug charges. In April of 2022, Russia released Trevor Reed, a former Marine imprisoned 2 years earlier for assaulting a Russian police officer, or a few, actually, police officers. At the same time, the United States freed a Russian pilot jailed for drug trafficking. The United States also holds Alexander Vinnik, a Russian money launderer extradited from Greece last year, and Vladimir Dimayev, a malware and ransomware hacker extradited from South Korea in 2021. And Washington is seeking the extradition from Brazil of Sergei Cherkasov, an alleged Russian spy who attended graduate school in Washington under deep cover. My goodness, the stuff that goes on. But important that we all recognize that these things are happening. So that's going to be really fascinating. Now let's look at something else that's happening on the world stage. The United States is going to send F-16 fighter jet to the Strait of Hormuz after Iran fires on an oil tanker. The United States is beefing up its use of fighter jets around the strategic Strait of Hormuz to protect ships from Iranian seizures, a senior defense official said on Friday, adding that the United States is increasingly concerned about the growing ties between Iran, Russia, and Syria across the Middle East. Speaking to Pentagon reporters, the official said that the United States will send F-16 fighter jets to the Gulf region this weekend to augment the A-10 attack aircraft that has been patrolling there for more than a week. The move comes after Iran tried to seize two oil tankers near the Strait last week, opening fire on one of them. The defense official, who spoke on condition of anonymity to provide details of military operations in the region, said the F-16 will give air cover to the ships moving through the waterway and increase the military's visibility in the area as a deterrent to Iran. The U.S. Navy said in both instances the Iranian naval vessels backed off when the USS McFaul, MCFAUL, a guided missile destroyer, arrived on the scene. In addition, the defense official told reporters that the United States is considering a number of military options to address increasing Russian aggression in the skies over Syria, which complicated efforts to strike an Islamic State group leader last weekend. The official declined to detail the options, but said the United States will not cede any territory and will continue to fly in the western part of the country on anti-Islamic State missions. Well, the Russian military activity, which has increased in frequency and aggression since March, stems from growing cooperation and coordination between Moscow, Tehran, and the Syrian government to try to pressure the United States to leave Syria, the official said. Well, the official said that Russia is beholden to Iran for its support in the war in Ukraine. And Tehran wants the United States out of Syria so it can more easily move lethal aid to Lebanese Hezbollah and threaten Israel. The United States has been has seen more collaboration, planning, and intelligence sharing largely between mid-level Russian and Iranian Quds force leaders in Syria to pressure the United States to remove troops from Syria, the official added. There are about 900 U.S. forces in the country, and others move in and out to conduct missions targeting Islamic State group militants. The United States does not believe that Russian aircraft plan to drop bombs on U.S. troops or shoot down manned aircraft, but there are concerns that Russian pilots will knock a Reaper drone out of the sky and that Moscow believes that type of action would not get a strong U.S. military response, the official said. So, as an example, in March, a Russian warplane poured jet fuel on a U.S. surveillance drone and then struck its propeller, forcing the U.S. military to ditch the MQ-9 Reaper into the Black Sea. The incident spiked tensions between the two countries and triggered a call between their defense chiefs that led to no direct military response. Last week, Rear Admiral Oleg Gurinov, head of the Russian Reconciliation Center for Syria, said that the Russian and Syrian militaries have been doing joint training. In comments carried by Syrian state media, he said Moscow was concerned about drone flights by the United States-led coalition over northern Syria, calling them systematic violations of protocols and, quote, designed to avoid clashes between the two militaries. Well, U.S. and Russian military commanders routinely communicate over a deconfliction phone line that has been in place for several years to avoid unintended clashes in Syria, where both sides have troops on the ground and in the air. There are often many calls a day and at times result in angry threats as commanders argue over an ongoing operation, said the U.S. official. Describing a conversation, the official said that the Russians will often declare an area of space a restricted operating zone and say they're doing military exercises there. Well, the U.S. sees no exercises and tells Russia that American forces are on a counter-terror mission against the Islamic State group and plan to fly in that area. The Russians then say they can't guarantee U.S. aircraft safety if they go there. And once the mission begins and the aircraft move into the zone, quote, it sometimes gets very heated, end quote, said the official, as both sides loudly protest and reject the other's assertions. The most recent incident was on Friday morning when a Russian aircraft flew repeatedly over the Tanf garrison in eastern Syria, where U.S. forces are trained, are training Syrian allies and monitoring Islamic State militant activity. The official said the Russian AN-30 aircraft was collecting intelligence on the base. The U.S. did not have fighter aircraft in the area and took no direct action against the Russian flight. One second. Okay. Just wanted to make sure we were all on target there. Bear with me a second here. All right, one second. I want you to get on to another point. One second. Where am I here? Okay, I want you to get back to this whole issue with regard to Russia. Private Russian military companies are multiplying, and so are the Kremlin's problems. The Kremlin said on Friday that it is considering granting legal status to some of the more than two dozen private military companies active in Russia. Legally, these shadow paramilitary groups do not exist, which allows them to operate parallel to Russia's armed forces, at times doing high-risk, quote, dirty, end quote, jobs for the army while giving Moscow a measure of deniability. Kremlin has announced it may give legal status to some of the many private military companies, PMCs, active within Russia, notably the Wagner Group, but also lesser-known militias like Convoy, Patriot, the Moran Security Group, and Shchit, which is the Russian word for shield. Quote, legally, the Wagner private military group does not exist and has never existed, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters, noting that the status of companies such as Wagner remain rather complicated, quote-unquote. The declaration came a day after a similar statement made by Russian President Vladimir Putin to the Kommersant or Business Daily. The Wagner Group is here, but it does not exist legally, he said. And Putin said its eventual legalization was a question to be discussed in the Duma, the lower house of parliament, and within the government. And yet the number of private military companies active in Russia has continued to grow in recent years, boosted by the necessity of drafting soldiers to fight the war in Ukraine, as well as the Kremlin's willingness to make these shadow armies an instrument of Russian foreign policy. Weakened by sanctions and increasingly isolated on the international stage since its illegal annexation of Crimea back in 2014, Russia has been looked for or has looked for a way to boost its geopolitical influence, particularly in Syria and on the African continent, notably through the Wagner Group. Well, Washington's use of the Blackwater mercenary group in Iraq became an international symbol of the increasing privatization of war. Following Russia's 2014 annexation of Ukraine, Yevgeny Prigozhin co-founded the Wagner paramilitary group, whose members were largely comprised of former special forces and recruits from prisons. Once a close Putin ally, Prigozhin's fate has been uncertain since a failed June 24 rebellion saw his men briefly march on Moscow. Private military companies provide numerous advantages for the Russian state, including costing less than regular troops and the fact that legally they do not exist. And this allows Moscow to wage hybrid warfare far afield, all the while denying involvement. Russia's military doctrine sought to focus on asymmetric responses to much more powerful enemies like NATO, and Danilo Delle Fave, an intelligence and military strategy analyst for the International Team for the Study of Security in Verona, said, quote, "You can use mercenaries to do not only the dirty jobs, but the high-risk ones that you don't want to leave to your special forces," end quote. Another advantage for the Kremlin is that mercenaries help mask the scale of Russian losses in Ukraine. Unconventional armed forces are rarely included in official casualties accounts, thus reducing the political cost of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Russia has 27 active private military companies, with more than 70% created after 2014, according to Mofar, a Ukrainian investigative and fact-checking website. Energy giant Gazprom recently created two private armies known as Fakel, which means torch in Russian, and Plamya, which means flame in Russian. The mission of these private armies is to protect the company's assets abroad, but also to back up Russian forces in Ukraine. And since November of last year, even the Russian Orthodox Church finances its own PMC, whose volunteers were to take part in the Kremlin's war in Ukraine. The number of PMCs could continue to grow, especially after the war in Ukraine ends, said Marcel Plista, a specialist in international relations at the University of St. Andrews in the United Kingdom and a former analyst for the United States Department of Defense. For the many Russians mobilized on the front line, these private militias provide work opportunities and allow them to continue using the skills they learned on the job, he added. According to a survey published by Mofar, about a quarter of Russian PMCs operate solely in Ukraine, while a dozen are present in several countries around the world, particularly in Africa. Their role is simple: to defend the interests of their leaders and those of the Kremlin. In the same vein, Wagner's model consists of seizing natural resources in exchange for combat missions, military training, and intelligence. Quote, "Wagner is unique compared to other PMCs because Prigozhin is not just a mercenary boss, he is a businessman. In Africa, he exploits gold mines through his companies. with his own employees and his own security services. He then exports minerals to other countries. There are no other militias with the same capabilities at the moment, Pushta pointed. So not so private militia, private, not so private private militias. So far from being autonomous, Russian PMCs and their leaders maintain close ties with the Russian security apparatus and are subordinate to the Putin regime. The Wagner Group is particularly known for taking in former Russian military intelligence or GRU officers. Putin himself admitted to the links between the Russian state and Prigozhin's men after its failed uprising. Quote, from May 2022 to May 2023, the Russians paid more than 86 billion rubles, that's approximately $940 million, to the Wagner Group, the Russian president had said. The U.S. Treasury in June of 2022 slapped sanctions on one of the oldest and most important private security companies in Russia, the RSB Group, which provides global services for Russian companies in close coordination with the FSB, Russia's main federal security service. Well, Minister of Defense Sergei Shoigu controls and finances several shadow armies and is affiliated with the Patriot paramilitary group. Sergei Aksionov, the Russian-appointed head of the illegally annexed Crimea Peninsula, has been playing warlord since the end of 2022 with Convoy, a private militia that has carried out several operations in the Kherson region of Ukraine. Well, the whole concept is divide to conquer. Elites have realized that having a PMC can get the benefits from the Kremlin, because if you contribute to the war effort in Ukraine, you will be rewarded, said Anton Shekhovtsov, the director of the Center for Democratic Integrity, in an interview with Euronews. Well, according to De La Save, this quasi-feudal system serves to consolidate Putin's power. The multiple power centers, all in competition with each other, prevents them from creating alliances and turning against him. But Pushta said that this fragmentation ultimately weakened the Kremlin, with the aborted Wagner rebellion revealing its fragility. Quote, there has been a fragmentation of security missions in Russia. The Ministry of Defense, the PMC, the National Guard, which is almost Vladimir Putin's personal security service. All this has led to the weakening of the state, said Pushta. In the wake of the Wagner rebellion, the Kremlin seems to feel the time has come for the state to regain control of its nebulous armed groups, private military companies that have required to sign a contract with the defense ministry since July 1st. And Moscow released a video last month showing the Chechen paramilitary group Akhmat signing the contract to show how paramilitary groups were falling into line with the new law. Wagner, for its part, is still experiencing the after effects of its short-lived insurrection last month. The Russian army announced on July 12th that it had received more than 2,000 pieces of military hardware from the group, adding that it had also taken in 2,500 tons of ammunition and around 20,000 small arms. The Pentagon said on Friday that Wagner mercenaries are no longer participating in, quote, any significant capacity, end quote, in combat operations in Ukraine. So I guess that's the latest. So we'll see how these things go. One second. Oh, my goodness. Let me just quickly check here. One second. I want you to check this out. Bear with me a moment here. Okay, sorry, that's not for us. Okay. I want to see what else I have here to cover with you. Now, I'm not sure if I covered this with you. I think not. Iran's morality police are resuming patrols after a lull following the death of Mahsa Amini in Iran. Iranian authorities on Sunday announced a new campaign to force women to wear the Islamic headscarf and morality police to return to the streets 10 months after the death of a woman in their custody sparked nationwide protests. The morality police had largely pulled back following the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini last September, as authorities struggled to contain mass protests calling for the overthrow of the theocracy that has ruled Iran for over four decades. The protests largely died down earlier this year following a heavy crackdown in which over 500 protesters were killed and nearly 20,000 detained. But many women continued to flout the official dress code, especially in the capital of Tehran and other cities. Well, the morality police were only rarely seen patrolling the streets, and in December there were even some reports later denied that they had been disbanded. Authorities insisted throughout the crisis that the rules had not changed. Iran's clerical rulers viewed the hijab as a key pillar of the Islamic revolution that brought them to power and consider more casual dress a sign of Western decadence. On Sunday, General Saeed Montazeror Mahdi, a police spokesperson, said that the morality police would resume notifying and then detaining women not wearing hijab in Tehran. The men and women of the morality police could be seen patrolling the streets in marked vans. Late on Saturday, police arrested Mohammed Sadehi, a young and relatively unknown actor, in a raid on his home that he appears to have broadcast on social media. Earlier, he had posted a video in response to another online video showing a woman being detained by the morality police. Quote, "Believe me, if I see such a scene, I might commit murder," end quote, he said. The website of the semi-official Hamshahri Daily, which is affiliated with the Tehran municipality, said he was arrested for encouraging people to use weapons against the police. Well, the battle over the hijab became a powerful rallying cry last fall, with women playing a leading role in the protest. The demonstrations quickly escalated into calls for the overthrow of Iran's clerical rulers, whom the mostly young protesters accused of being corrupt, repressive, and out of touch. And Iran's government blamed the protests on a foreign conspiracy without providing proof or any other form of evidence. So several Iranian celebrities joined the protest, including prominent directors and actors from the country's celebrated film industry. Several Iranian actresses were detained after appearing in public without the hijab or expressing support for the protest. In a recent case, actress Azadeh Samadi was barred from social media and ordered by a court to seek psychological treatment for, quote, antisocial personality disorder, end quote, after appearing at a funeral 2 months ago wearing on her head. So that's the story. What can I tell you? So I think that's it for us today. I think we've covered I think that's everything that we're going to cover today. All right. So that's where we are. I want to thank you for being with us. Tomorrow is going to be a day in which Cooley law professors Jeffrey Swartz and Brendan Beery will open the broadcast from 10 to 11, and I'll follow from 11 to 12. So thank you for being with us today. As always, all the best to you, Thanks for joining us, and thanks for supporting our Yonkers Tribune website. All the best. Goodbye. Okay, and the episode first. We've got to do that first.